Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Police believe a woman who killed three children and three adults in a shooting at a school in Nashville, Tennessee, was a former pupil. She used two rifles and a pistol during the attack. Scotland is set to get a new First Minister later, as Humza Yousaf is officially confirmed in post. He beat SNP rivals Kate Forbes and Ash Regan in the race to succeed Nicola Sturgeon. Workers in Israel have launched a nationwide strike as part of protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to overhaul the judiciary. In a television interview, Piers Morgan asked him if he understood their concerns.
Well, I said that there's not going to be this unlimited power. When you want to restrain unlimited power, you don't go and give the parliament unlimited power.
And Prince Harry claims he was largely deprived of important parts of his teenage years due to the unlawful actions of the Daily Mail's publisher. From Radio News Hub, I'm Edward Breslin.
Now get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero 7 days a week with Comparsa Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Meerkat app from Comparsa Market.
With a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries. App only, two codes per day. Exclusions and T's and C's apply.
Colourful.
Coming up next,
colourful,
Julius
colourful radio.
I've lived in social housing for years. Our bathroom's in a right state, falling to bits, mould, just horrible. It's a nightmare for us. I've reported it to the landlord, but they haven't fixed it. But what can you do to make it right?
Everyone deserves a home that's safe, secure and well-maintained. Anything less is unacceptable. That's why if you have a problem with your social housing provider, it's now easier to make things right. Find out more at gov.uk/social housing complaints.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sayed Amouji. Believe it or not, your next trip to the toilet could save your life. If you receive an NHS bowel cancer screening kit in the post, you should complete it as soon as possible. You do it privately at home by following a few simple steps. Just a tiny sample detects signs of cancer before you notice anything wrong. If you're sent a bowel cancer screening kit, put it by the loo, don't put it off. For more information, visit nhs.uk/bowel-screening.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good evening, or even good afternoon from whichever time zone you're connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Mbaluto. And today I've got a great guest with us, extremely inspirational. Her story is amazing. She has overcome odds to be where she is today. And you won't believe things she's been through, but yet she will always sport that wonderful smile. And even in the midst of the cold winter of London, or where we are broadcasting from, or even the other place in Europe that is cold, she'll be like telling you, "Is it still okay?" Welcome to the show, Esther.
Thank you very much.
Please introduce yourself better than I have to our listeners.
No problem. Julius, thank you very much for hosting me. My name is Esther Mukuhe. That is the way we pronounce it in Kenya. So Mukuhe means short, and I'm actually very tall, so my mom, I don't know what happened.
You defied your name.
Exactly. I think it's just my nature. So I am going to turn 34 years old on the 21st of March, the first day of spring. And I was born in Nakuru, Kenya. And raised also in Nakuru, worked in Mombasa, and moved 10 years ago to Italy, in the south of Italy, Sicily. I am a business lady. I've always been a business lady. I was born in a house of business ladies and men. And I run a bed and breakfast in Sicily. So briefly, that is what I can say Esther is. And I'm a mom of a 9-year-old boy. Yeah.
Esther, that's great. You see, one of the things people, when they go to diaspora, when they go to abroad, as they say, I'm going abroad from Africa, they're choosing countries whereby they can immediately speak the language. Yeah. Like Kenyans, a lot choose to go to US or America or even UK, where it's English-speaking countries. It kind of becomes easy for you. But, you know, Italy, unless you studied Italian, when you were in Kenya, I don't know. How did you end up there?
How did I end up here? And how did I end up speaking Italian language? So how did I end up here? I ended up here because I got married to an Italian guy and we moved here 10 years ago. About the language, honestly, it was not an easy task because Italian is a bit complicated. And in order for you, as you said, in order for you to have a smooth beginning, you know, language is very, very important because with language, then you can be able to express your feelings, you can be able to express yourself, your needs. So I did not go to school in Kenya, neither did I go to school in Italy. I learned Italian by listening to the native speakers here. And mostly my mother-in-law. I used to spend a lot of time with my mother-in-law. So I learned by listening and trying to speak. Even if I made mistakes, I was not like embarrassed because I did not know the language. I took it easy. And within 1 year, I could actually speak very good Italian and the dialect here. So, yeah, I did not go to school. I learned through. That was my school. That was my
power of listening.
Exactly.
Power of listening. No, that's great. That's great. Esther, of course, today we are talking to you because you have overcome a lot of hordes just to be where you are. Language, far from it, it's not a language. That's a small matter. Of course. As I'm speaking to you, of course, listeners, Esther is a cancer survivor and her story is just amazing. And of course, all that, and also combine that with business, and also combine all these experiences with COVID. Esther, let us start from how did you first know you had cancer and how are you diagnosed?
Okay. So it was in 2018 at around September. Actually, at around June, let me start from there because it is where my story actually begins. At around June of 2018, on the 16th, I lost my grandmother. And as you know, the grandmother figure in Kenya is a very important figure because she was like my mom. And the fact that I was in Italy did not help so much. And the fact that she was a Muslim. So when she died, it meant that they were going to bury her the same day, if not the next day. And luckily, I was in the process of renewing my documents and I could not get home. And so that is where everything began. Because I remember when my grandmother was taken to the hospital, she was a very strong woman, never had been in the hospital. There's something that told me that she was not going to make it. Something just told me, I could feel it. And I remember telling my mom, we need to accept what comes our way. And so they thought that she had cancer and she did not. So after she died, we were like, okay, it's okay. She died, but at least it was not cancer because, you know, cancer is a big word. And so I remember at around June, very stressful month, I was working. It is, you know, the season had already started around here with the tourism, stressful being a mom and everything else. I started noticing that I was losing a lot of weight, a lot of weight. I was not sleeping very well, very tired. I could not get, but I just thought it was the stress that I had gone through because of the loss of my grandmother. It was such a big deal for me. Anyway, come around July, I was still working. I had lost at around 6 kilograms already. I am 174. I was like 48 kilograms and it was not good. So one day while I was working on my computer, I could not breathe very well. So I go to the nearest clinic and they tell me that I needed to go and undergo a test for thyroid screening. So I went and did the thyroid screening and it came out that I had hyperthyroidism. And it was the same disease that had killed my grandmother. So we were grateful that it was not cancer, but here I was with the same disease. And it was not easy for me to tell that to my mom. She had just lost her mom. Anyway, mid-July at midnight, I was in bed with my husband and my son. I do not know why. I was just thinking about my life, my grandmother. I don't know why. I just lifted my right hand and I put my right hand on the left breast and immediately I felt a lump. I was lying down. It was such a strange thing. So I woke up, I went to the bathroom. I looked at the mirror, so because I wanted to see what was going on. So I observed my breast on the mirror and I could see that there was a lump. It was so big that it could be seen with the naked eyes. Then my skin just right below where the lump was like there was like a dimple. It was dimpled. And I remember panicking because I knew that lumps and dimples on the breast are not a good sign. So I go back to bed. I ask my husband if he can feel the same thing that I felt. And he said yes. And okay, I go to sleep. The next morning, I go to my doctor. And I explain to her the situation. She examines me and she tells me, yeah, I can actually see it. I can actually feel it. It's quite big. But what we do is I will send you home. You wait maybe for 1 week after you get your periods, because it happens that sometimes your breast can be inflamed. You come back and we see what to do. So she gave me a cream that I had to put on the breast like every single day to help with the inflammation, as she said. So I take that and I go home. I go home and I put that cream on my bedside and don't use it. I wait for 1 week and I go back to her. So I go back to her. She examines me once again and the lump was still there. So she looks at me and she tells me, okay, now we need to go on and do some tests just to verify what could be going on. And so this was around 1 week had passed. We were almost in August. She told me what I was supposed to do, echography and stuff, MRI. So I book my echography and I go do it. And I remember that day very well. It was the 1st of August, 2018. I wanted to go alone, but then my husband told me, okay, I will come with you. And he drove me there. there was a doctor, a female doctor, same age as me. So she told me to lie down and she was examining me. And every move that she made, I saw her like almost panicking and being unsure of what she was actually seeing or feeling. And so she used the echography machine, and she went on and on, and she started asking me questions like, how old are you? I was 29 years old then. She asked me if I had kids. I told her one, if I had breastfed. So every single question that she asked me was a routine questions that they always ask people when it's they suspect that they have breast cancer. And nothing would have put me in that situation to say that I was at risk of breast cancer, because in my family no one had ever had breast cancer or cancer. Everything was okay, apart from I was really young and I had breast cancer. So she tells me, okay, now listen, I'm not going to tell you that I am sure, but according to what I see, I don't like the look of the lump. So what you should do is, I'm not telling you it's cancer, but we need to do other tests to confirm and see what type of lump it is. So I remember coming out of the room really devastated. I don't know. I just had a feeling that something was going wrong. And that is the only time during my period of my experience where I cried a lot, because I just went into the car with the results. My husband was trying to console me. He told me, no, listen, you know, they've not told you it's cancer. It's not anything. Just let's wait and see. And I remember telling him, I know. I can feel that something is up. And I cried all the way home.
Colorful radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Listeners, this is Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. Today I'm hosting great lady, Hester Kahungi. We spoke earlier, and of course, at that point, now you realize the doctors have spoken. Yeah. There you are going out. And, of course, husband consoling you. And also, Hester, a very different moment in your life, having to deal with a lot. How was that, especially that little journey from the hospital on your way home? How did it cut, pan out?
It was the longest journey of my life, even though we were like 10 minutes away from my house. I had a lot of thoughts going on, because I was thinking about my mom. I was not strong enough to tell her that. I could not like think of how I was going to break the news to her. I was not even thinking about myself, honestly. I was thinking about my son, who was 5 years old then. I was thinking about the fact that I'm away from home. I was thinking about all my projects, I was too young. It was a rough 10 minutes, the worst 10 minutes of my life. I cried that out. And when I got in front of my house, because we were going to have lunch with my in-laws, I just came out and wiped the tears and pretended like everything was okay, but it wasn't. Yeah, so, you know, when life flashes just right in front of your face, like, now what are we supposed to do? Yeah, that was the situation.
Wow. This time round, still you were carrying on with your hotel business in Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was still working. And then I had a business partner, my cousin-in-law. So that was also a problem for me because I was thinking, there was a lot to think about, as you can imagine. But I think also the stress was about, you know, that I had to, even before I knew that something was going on, even when I was losing all this weight, being tired, I had to juggle my life, you know, like I have a business partner here, I cannot let her down. I have a house that I have to run. I have a business. I have a family. I have, you know, it was too much, too much. Yeah.
And then how does it turn out? Did you go back to hospital again after that
yes,
day?
I did. I remember after I came out of the hospital, this place that I had done the echography, the doctor actually recommended where I was supposed to carry on more tests. And she told me next time, when you come to do the MRI, I'm going to be there. So we are going to meet the same place and it's going to be me who's going to do the MRI. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So I called my doctor, the first doctor that, the family doctor, exactly. I sent her the results. And when she saw them, she told me, now we need to do this. We need to book an appointment so that you can go and the breast unit, you can get examined in the breast unit. And I told her, okay. She recommended the place and the doctor that I was supposed to go to. And since I know a few people around here, I knew a few people who had told me about their story with breast cancer. So the first thing I did was call them and ask them, do you know about this doctor? Do you know about this place? Can I depend on them? Can I trust them? And they told me yes. And they actually helped me, like, call them without being able to wait for a very long time before they could visit me. And I called them and they told me, okay, now on Monday you have to be here at 8. We are going to examine you and see the way forward. So before I could do the MRI, I went to the breast unit to get examined. And I remember that was another very nerve-wracking situation because when I arrived there, the doctor, I remember him, very short guy. Unfortunately, he died last year from cancer.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. And so he examined me and he looks at me and he tells me, I'm sorry, but we have to perform surgery to remove the lump. There's nothing that is the first step that we have to take. So you decide, do you want to be operated here or do you want to go somewhere else? I told him, listen, I prefer to do everything here. And he told me, so can I put you in the waiting list? I told him, yes, you can. When can I come in for the surgery? And he told me the 18th of September. So it was at around August. So for me, September was like a very long, long wait. And he told me, I'll call you. They call you and they will tell you what to do. I asked him, did I have to do the MRI? He told me, not really, because before the surgery, I'm going to do it. But if you prefer to do it, you can do it, no problem. So we came out and I remember that day when you don't feel your feelings, it's like I was cold. I had frozen my my feelings.
Wow.
But then I told my husband, listen, I need to do the MRI because I really, really, really need to know. And so we called again and told them I will be coming in. They told me, unfortunately, the machine was broken.
No, no.
And you have
is
to
this MR, is it MRI? What is it? It's like a test to establish whether you...
It is like, I don't know if right now I'm saying the right thing, if it's MRI. It's like when they put you... It's like, you know, X-ray, but an advanced version.
Okay.
So they, it's like they have to... ignorantly, I could say, like, they have to take a photo of that area to see what is going on inside your body.
Yeah.
So I needed to do it for the breast, no?
Sure.
And so they told me, okay, after 1 week, we'll call you. And I was like, I cannot wait for 1 week. Anyway, I go back home and I continue going to work. But I remember every single day when I did not have anything to do, I used to sit on my sofa and I used to think and overthink and reason. And it was such a bad time for me. But it was around that time when I actually came in terms with what could be my life after that, you know, after that time with the maybes that I could, I used to say to myself, what if it's cancer? What if it's in a bad stage? What if I'm not going to make it? What am I going to tell my mom? So at around that time, I had the strength and the time to like sit in my feelings and cry and reason and be, you know, quiet and react. And they called me after 1 week. I went to do the MRI, and it was confirmed once again that actually the tumor was positive for cancer. And it was not only one tumor. I had two big ones and a few small ones around the whole breasts. And so I remember the doctor looking at me, and she told me the good news is that it has not spread anywhere else, but the bad news is, unfortunately, I can confirm that it's cancer. So you need to go through surgery. And they told her, okay, I had already booked the surgery day. So it was just a matter of time. Yeah. So I went home. I remember that day, still frozen. I could not... You know, when you're like, okay, it's okay, what can I do? So I went home and waited for September. September came. I went there. They did surgery. Before surgery, they asked me if I wanted to talk to a therapist. I told them no. Honestly, I had already, like, done surgery. I had already done therapy alone. And I just wanted to get done with it, like I had accepted. The worst part about this story is like growing up, many people who know me know that that part of my body, my breast was like an identity for me because I'm a very slim, tall girl. But I had, you know, you could see, that is the first thing that you could see. So it was not like I was attached to my breast, but it was like I was going to lose an identity, you know? And
very important.
Yeah. And as a woman, you can imagine it is important because it is important. We know that we breastfeed to babies, and, you know, it is that feminine side that is what makes you are. Anyway, I just wanted to get done with it. I told them, no, okay, just do the surgery and let's see. So during surgery, they explained to me that they were going to do some tests. So I was going to have the mastectomy. And they would do tests to find out what stage it was and what kind of a tumor it was. And that is what happened. So when I woke up from surgery, I remember I woke up and there was my husband and the surgeon and the doctor. And I remember hearing because I was still under I remember hearing my husband asking the doctor, so in Italian, so what was the situation? And the doctor looked at me and he looked at my husband and he told him the situation was not very good because the tumor was the most very, very aggressive kind of a tumor. Luckily, it had not spread to other parts apart from my lymph nodes. And they had removed those. I had like one lymph node infected already. But in other parts, I was clear. And I remember asking them if I could look at the area where they had performed the surgery because I could feel, you know, there was something missing. So the doctor told me, if you want, it's okay. And I took my phone, I put it on the selfie mode, and they removed the bandages. And I looked at that.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
The kind of surgery that I did was nipple sparing. So it means that they remove the breast tissue. They leave you with the skin and the nipple because, you know, sometimes they actually do the radical mastectomy where they remove where they remove everything. But in my case, that was not so. So they had done the nipple sparing kind of a surgery, and they put like a small balloon under your muscle to prepare you for the reconstruction. So that balloon had to be, they put some liquid in it to give it more so the same shape like the other breast. So I remember looking at my breast and thinking, okay, I did not have any feelings. I was still in freeze mode. And I called my therapist and I asked her, this happened to me. Is it that I'm cold or what is happening? And she told me, listen, it is normal because you're in survival mode and you want to fight. And I told her, okay, don't worry, I'm going to fight. And so, yeah, that was the beginning of my journey into the scary world of cancer. It was stage 2, and they told me I was going to do chemotherapy, no radiation therapy. I did not do that. And so came out of the hospital after 3 days and started with the chemotherapy after like a month, I remember. At around October, that is when I remember I started the chemotherapy on the 31st of October. Before chemotherapy, they had undergone another test because after the surgery, they do another, right now, I don't know what it is called. It is like MRI, but the whole body to actually see if you have cancer in your bones, maybe in your lungs. They do that to make sure that...
Just to check, to make sure that it didn't extend.
Exactly. So they did that. And unfortunately, they had seen something like a lump right above my, like between my forehead and nose. And I remember receiving this news on the 30th of October, which was my son's birthday. And it was really devastating because they were not sure if it was something really serious or what it was. And so that day I had to sit that afternoon with the oncologist, and he told me, listen, we have to investigate before chemotherapy to make sure that this is not something else. So I come out of the hospital and I go back home, I dress, and I go to my son's birthday party. And it was really, really difficult because everyone, you know, everyone was smiling, everyone was happy. I had to put this face, this happy face, but inside me. I knew what was going on. And some people had already were asking me because they knew I had already gone through surgery. So it was like a mix of, it's a birthday party, but people also want to like console and know and find out. And I just told them, now, listen, I'm okay. I did the surgery. We need to celebrate my son. No one is going to ask me again about how I am doing. So let's just celebrate. Let it be a happy moment and let it be. And so since it was like a close friends and family, they respected my request. And we celebrated my son. And on the 31st of October, so the next day, they called me and they told me, we have good news. It's nothing. And you can begin chemotherapy with no delays. And that for me was like a gift. But the problem was I had not told my family anything because I went through surgery, everything, without telling my mom. I did not have the strength to open my mouth and tell her that.
Just because also she had lost her own mom as well.
Exactly.
I did not have.
Exactly. I remember I had shared it with my friend, but my mom, I did not have that strength. So I figured out that I was going to do the first chemotherapy, see how it would go, then call my mom. So I did the first chemotherapy. It went well. Then I remember I took the phone and called my sister, not my mom. And my sister is a very emotional person. I think that was, she would have been the last person I should have called. So I called her, we talk, and I tell her, listen, I need to tell you something. I went through surgery. They found a lump. I had to go through surgery. Now I'm going through chemotherapy because I just found out I have stage 2 cancer and you don't have to tell mom about it. And she just froze. And I told her, don't worry, everything is okay. The doctors here are very hands-on. Treatment is for free. You know, I started like encouraging her because I could see that she was in complete shock.
Difficult news, yeah, to share.
Yeah, of course. Then by phone.
Or to receive,
yeah. And being so far away did not help. Anyway, then after the second chemotherapy, I told my mom. First, I told my sister, listen, I'm going to the hospital because they have found a lump. Maybe or maybe not. It might be something serious. I'm going to tell you. But I had already done surgery and everything else. I called her and told her, listen, they've confirmed that it is cancer and I have to go through chemotherapy. And I really don't remember my mom's reaction. I actually don't remember. I really don't remember. Up to this day, every time I think about it, but I don't remember her reaction completely. I think I canceled it. I don't remember. And so they prepared. They asked for the visa. And my mom, my sister, and my niece came to Italy while I was doing the first 4 rounds of chemotherapy. Luckily, I was healthy. Everything was perfect. I never had any problems. Nothing. I was active. I used to come out of chemotherapy and go to work like nothing happened. And so during that time when my mom and my family was here, it was very easy for them because they saw that I was okay. And I actually took them with me for like a chemo session. They got to know the doctors here, my therapists, the nurses. It is such a beautiful, it is a very weird thing to say, but I've always said it. It was such a beautiful place to be in. It was a hospital, and it is a hospital. The worst unit that you could be in. But for me, it was just like being reborn. Very, very peaceful. It's I have never understood why. Maybe the reason is because living that moment in that hospital gave me a chance to live again and find out what I was made of and how much strength I had in me. And then these beautiful people, I remember the oncologist used to, when not only me, but everyone, he used to like wait for me, hug me. The nurses are there. We are taking selfies. It used to look like a party. And I used to go back home laughing, relaxed. And my husband used to tell me, what do they give you there? Because you always come home very happy and relaxed. It is very uncommon.
You think they made it easy for you to overcome?
Exactly. So everything was so easy. I remember talking so much to other patients. My mom used to tell me, just sleep, just rest. I could not do that because I'm such a talkative person. And I felt something just came out of me, and I used to give courage to other people as if I did not have cancer, as if I was there to like do therapy on people. And it was such a lovely, lovely time for me. And I found my peace. And it was very easy. I finished chemotherapy. Everything was positive. No sickness, no side effects. A few ones, I lost my hair, I lost my eyebrows, I had like black nails, but nothing serious. And the best thing was that it was working. So I remember when my mom, this is back forward, my mom was here for like 1 month. So chemotherapy took quite long. Maybe, I don't know if it was 8 months. I don't remember, honestly. But I remember telling my mom after 4 rounds, listen, you know, I finished chemotherapy now. So now I just have to do a few tests. But the tests that I've done so far, so good, nothing is, everything is okay. Because I needed her to go home. I needed her to go back to her life. I really felt like she deserved that. So she told me, okay, now let's, since you finished the chemotherapy, it's okay, now you're okay. She had talked to the doctors, she had talked to my in-laws. No one had told her that. Maybe she's going to find out right now. I had not finished with chemotherapy. But she went home with my sister because my niece had to go to school. And she was relaxed. And she used to tell her friends and other people, you have no idea the kind of image that I had of cancer and the cancer unit and chemotherapy. It's completely different because in Italy, where my daughter was, people used to come to chemotherapy dressed as if they were going for dinner, with lipstick on, with hair done. No one was weak. No one was looking like they're going to die. It was such a perfect place. And that gave her a lot of courage. And I remember my mom just being so relaxed. And that gave me the strength, you know, to go on with the chemotherapy and fight and not even tell her about it because she was in her space, you know, and in her element. And I was like, okay, God has been faithful enough to make sure that I'm okay. I have a good support system. We can do this. And so it was very easy for me and her and anyone else that was, you know, around me, because I cannot stress this enough. Anybody who is dealing with a patient that has cancer, I think it is such a difficult place to be in, because you don't know what to tell them. You don't know how to react. You don't know if you're supposed to cry. I could see that for my husband and anybody, anyone that was around me. I could see it was a mixed reaction kind of a thing. There are those who think you're going to die. There are those who think you're going to live. There are those who think you're exaggerating. There are those, you know, there's too much going on. But luckily, everything went very well.
Colorful, 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 colorful radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
After chemotherapy, end of 2019, I went back home to visit my mom. I visit my mom and my family, come back in 2020, February, at around February, then COVID hit.
Were you clear before COVID? Were you fully healed before COVID? Or?
Yes, I was. I was just recovering from a few side effects of you know, the treatment. It's very heavy treatment. It's very toxic. So, you know, being very tired, and I was still dealing with my thyroid problems. So, and also mentally, like getting to come in terms with what I had gone through. I still, the reality still had not hit me yet. So I was still there, you know, when you juggle and think, it actually happened to me. Sometimes I used to stop and think, oh my God, I had cancer. I actually had those moments, but nothing serious. I was never sad. That was the funniest part. So yeah, I was clear before COVID.
Wow. So Esther, someone, of course, a lot of our listeners, have got families, of course, families, some of them may be going through the same. Probably in terms of breast cancer, is there anything ladies should just be doing to make sure that there's a form of prevention or something?
Okay. When it comes to breast cancer, and I always say any type of disease that you have in your body, I think what saved my life was knowing my body. What saved my life was advocating for my health, because if that day I did not go to the doctor and tell her this is what is happening and go on with the tests as they told me, you know, maybe I will not be here. Knowing my body means that the moment that I touched my breast in such a funny moment and, you know, I knew that something different, there was something different from normally what happens. So the advice that I would give ladies, the advice that I'd give anyone is know yourself, know your body, know the changes that happen to you and do not ignore them. Some people prefer to say, I would rather not know. I'm here to tell you that you would rather know. You would rather know because you have people depending on you. You have family, you have your mom, your family. If you'd rather not know, then go to the hospital when it's too late. It will be too late for you. It will be too late for your friends. It will be too late for anyone who knows you and loves you. So I always tell people you should not advocate for your body. Have the courage. It's not the easiest thing, but listen to your body. Have the courage. And when they tell you you're supposed to go and do mammography at 40 years, at 50 years, love yourself, love your body, love yourself and take care of yourself. It doesn't mean that you need to eat healthy. No, you just need to know the slightest change. Know yourself, advocate for yourself, for your body, your health. And you need courage. If you don't have courage, you always have friends, you always have family. You will find that strength. The thing with cancer, you have to get there on time. The thing with cancer, it teaches you to respect time, because before you get there, if you get there on time, you're saved. If you get there late, you're done. During treatment, you learn how to live each moment. You learn how to live each second. You learn how to appreciate time. So what cancer taught me is that time is the most important thing that this life has given you. So every single second, every single minute has to be lived. You need to tell people you love them. You need to respect yourself. You need to respect your time with others, with yourself, in this world. Time is everything, because time determines everything. At 29 years old, I was okay. I celebrated my 30th birthday in the oncology center with chemotherapy attached to my veins. So that was not the best birthday ever, but for me, I had more time. I had one more year, and it was the most amazing thing that could have ever happened to me. And 4 years later, I'm here to tell you that every single day that I go to bed, I always ask myself, will I ever, ever see 40 years? Will I ever be 50? Will I ever be able to see my son turn 18? So it's time. I respect the fact that I'm here, because I don't know about tomorrow. I don't know about the next minute, because 1 minute you're okay, the next minute you're not. 1 minute you're alive, the next minute you're dead. So the most important thing in this world is time, according to me.
I cannot add anything to that, because, wow, Africa in focus. And we got our listeners scattered across the globe this week. From Italy, we speak to Esther. And what an amazing story. Esther, you see, I mean, listening to you, looking at you, and or even the way you are right now, no one will ever think you ever went through anything.
I know.
That's challenging.
People get shocked.
How do you pick yourself up every morning? I know you respect time, but to keep that spark on your face, you know, on your face, and
yeah,
it's a new day.
Yes, it is. And I'm not going to lie, that those days when I don't want to wake up, there were those days when I was like, I want to sleep and never wake up. I want this to be a dream. I'm not going to tell people that, because that will be toxic positivity. You have to be positive, but you have to be realistic. So this taught me also to be very realistic and come in terms with the fact that death is something very normal. We are all going to die either way, or with COVID or with cancer. According to me, 2020, I was alive and so many people died of COVID. I had cancer, something that people fear, but I'm still here. So you just need to sit in your emotions, in your feelings. If you want to cry, cry. If you want to laugh, laugh. If you want to ignore your feelings for that day, do that. But you have to know how to sit in your feelings. I've had very rough days, but I've also had most amazing days of my life. And 4 years later, I repeat, actually, 34 years later, I am here thriving. So I will not let cancer, I did not let cancer define me or my life or my time.
You know, Esther, I can't wait one day to come and spend time in your B&B in Italy. You're still going on?
Yes, it is. You should. It's such a nice place. You'll be relaxed right in front of the sea. And I also gave it a Swahili name, so you will feel at home.
Well, what do you call it?
Bahari.
Bahari, yes. Yes, is the coastal word for the sea. Swahili, exactly. Word for sea.
Exactly. So many people, when they come here, they always know this is something very unique and they want to know what is Bahari. So that curiosity, it was also a marketing kind of a...
Oh, it's lovely. I love it. You see, when I'm one of the people who love seaside.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why. I just like to see endless masses of water. And that's my questions. Ask myself questions like, what keeps it there?
I know. It does not evaporate. It does not, you know, it is not absorbed. It is such a, yeah. I know.
And when you go around, you see they see erosion. You ask yourself another question. This water may it one day cover everything everywhere.
It's amazing, you know, the way things work. It's really amazing.
Ah, Esther, what an inspiring story. I mean, people listening to you, you have no reason to worry. Kick yourself a bit and keep going.
And you always have that inner strength. It always comes out. When need be, you will have that strength, trust me.
But that's what you're also telling us sometime. Something happens to illustrate you are stronger than you think.
Exactly.
So that's really wonderful. No, it's been a pleasure listening to your story. And yeah, you know what? Keep that smile. And yeah, you have every reason to be happy and jolly. And I've learned something. Time is everything.
Exactly. That's true. I think that is the way I should have put it.
Time is everything.
Time is everything. It is.
Yeah. When you have it, you have everything.
Yeah.
It's not the Ferrari. It's not the Rolls Royce. It's not the Jaguar.
It's not the tall building
you own. Time is everything.
It is not the beauty. Nothing. If you don't have time, then nothing.
Yeah. No, and you cannot extend it by your own devices.
Not at all. And you cannot go back or fast forward.
Or ask Siri.
Exactly.
Siri, tell me what I can do to live longer. Siri will tell you.
Exactly.
That one I don't know.
Exactly. So the only thing you have to do is live every second like you're going to die the next day. That is what, even if, when I take my phone, I always say, I'm living this moment like tomorrow does not exist. Period.
Thank you. Quite a lot to learn. Really appreciate. And of course, we will keep bringing you from time to time. And it's good to be talking with you this time, all the way from Italy. So our listeners, we are going global. So Africa in Focus goes global.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much, Esther. You enjoy the rest of your day, and you've been such a blessing to a lot of us in this particular program today. And we have learned a lot. And keep the good work you do.
I will thank you, Julius, for your time and for giving me this platform to share.
Colorful radio.
I'm never getting me for my body. I want light man.